again, and welcome to the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by
the Chemo Girls.
Once again, we're coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, at the National Women's Survivor Conference, where we are having the absolute honor of interviewing Mr. Scott Hamilton. He, of course, takes no real introduction.
That's right.
Because I know you guys know exactly who he is. He has delighted us on the ice. He's an Olympic gold medalist, and he is also a cancer survivor. Thank you so much, and welcome.
My pleasure. Thanks for what you're doing. It's great.
Yeah, it's been wonderful here at the convention, so much support and such.
Wow, just having everybody celebrate life.
That's
most
right.
Everyone here are survivors, or they're people going through treatment right now, and it is a true celebration and victory for life.
Well, you know, if you ask the National Coalition for Cancer Survivors, they'll tell you that every day you live with cancer, you're a survivor.
That's
so
right.
Every
yes.
person here, whether they've been through and they're finished their treatments or they're just beginning their treatments,
yes.
they qualify
yes.
under the rules of the game that you're a survivor.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that I would like to ask you is, you know, you obviously were a public figure before your diagnosis, and people were so familiar with you. How did that impact walking into your cancer story and walking through your cancer story?
Over a long period of time, I developed a relationship with a growing audience that was Stars on Ice, and we would go to 60 cities a year, and we would bring in a lot of people. And, you know, when you kind of do the math of how many people were there and how many people knew were there and how many people would like to have come but just didn't, that's a pretty big group
sure.
of people in each town. And so I understood that, you know, over all those years that I've been doing everything I could to build this show, build an audience, build interest in figure skating, build interest in male figure skating. You know, I did a lot just to kind of just build some, you know, gravity and some. So knowing that I was being diagnosed with something as big as cancer, you know, it's I lost my mother to cancer. I respected kind of what the disease could do, not in a good way respected,
right.
you know, but in a way that I had to really take care of things all at once. But also knowing that it would be. It would come as a shock to a lot of people because I was 50 cities into a 60-city tour.
Wow.
And I was
goodness.
Hurting a lot. I mean, I've learned over the years that I can, I have a pretty
play
high tolerance
pain.
To pain. Yeah.
I guess. You have a couple of bumps and bruises
yeah,
along the way.
Yeah, a few scars in there. But so we were pretty calculating in how we rolled the information out and how we managed the information. I never wanted it to be, and it's very tempting when you're in the public eye to sort of, make what you're going through a part of your daily, you know, persona. Mm. And I certainly didn't want that to be the case. And so
yes.
I really shut it down. I went away, and every little bit, if I had an update, I would, you know, my publicist would put out a little bit of a blurb here and there. And I just really just wanted to be quiet in my recovery and my treatment of the
yeah.
cancer and my chemotherapy. And so I just pretty much just, you know, bolted down the windows
yeah.
and locked all the doors and just thought, I really only want to share good stuff with people. And where I was around round three of chemo really wasn't that great. So it was better the way that we did it. I controlled all information. I didn't, you know, try to, you know, make my disease and a press opportunity, even though I was getting a lot of pressure to do that.
I bet. Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
So, I want to get through it and then get back to life. So I really treated it kind of emotionally and professionally as a bump in the road
yeah.
more than a life-changing experience.
Right.
It could be life-changing for me, but I didn't want it publicly to be anything more than a bump in the road.
Yeah. And since your success and survivorship, you've become very active with different programs in terms of mentoring
yeah.
and assistance.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit?
Well,
can you tell our audience what they need to know, what you're involved with that they need to know about today?
Yeah, one of the things I realized going through my cancer was there was a real lack of information, like user-friendly information, and there was a real lack of a true understanding for me to know what I'm about to endure.
Right.
And I asked all the questions. I went on the internet and I found all these medical websites and would have 12 syllable words in them and would be
like
all written basically
journal.
For like, a third year medical student or resident or something. And I just thought, you know, either I'm really sick or I'm really not smart. And I really realized that I'm really not smart. So I'm comfortable with that. So I realized that there's a lot of people out there that don't read medical journals.
Yeah.
And so that we probably needed to come up with something a little bit more user-friendly. Mm-hmm. So we built a website called chemocare.com. Mm-hmm. It gets about a million hits or more a month.
Yeah.
And it's everything you need to know about chemotherapy, how it's administered, the drugs. It's really cool what they do with the drugs. There's you know, I don't know.
I've been to the website many times, and I like being able to click on a specific drug
and it tells you what it does. But it does it in friendly language.
It does. It does. You did an excellent job with that.
And we translated it to Spanish. And there's also a whole part of it that helps you, just sort of deal with the side effects. Mm-hmm. So it's the chemotherapy experience. Mm-hmm. We ripped the ugly, nasty hood off of it, and we said, here it is, chemical therapy. And I always ask somebody when they're going through chemo and they're feeling rough, I go, you know what the biggest effect of chemotherapy is? And they always go right to hair loss or
nausea.
I go, no, the biggest effect of it is it kills cancer.
Yeah.
You know, so keep your eye on the prize and just keep moving forward.
There you go.
And the rest of it is you can manage those.
You can
deal with that. The big thing is it's killing the cancer. It's in your body. And hopefully through the research we're doing as part of this, my organization is called CARES, Cancer Alliance for Research, Education, and Survivorship. And part of the CARES is, you know, research. And I'd love it someday if, you know, and I'm even hearing of research where a doctor has found that if you give a massive amount of a chemotherapy drug to a certain cancer, it kills it. If you give a lesser amount, it changes that cell into a healthy cell.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, okay. So there's that kind of research going on right now.
That,
so
that would have been good to know.
I'm just saying that there's certain forms of cancer are all of a sudden it's really getting better.
Yeah.
And research needs to keep going because it'd be great if it's like, oh, you have stage 4 breast cancer. Here's a pill.
Yeah.
Take one of these for the next 4 days, and you should be fine.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
How amazing.
No, but that's where research can take us, you know, with the genome and everything else. So the R in the CARES is research. The E, the education part, is chemocare.com. Yeah. We're going to be launching another couple websites that all are about the cancer treatment experience. And then the S is survivorship. And that's empowering survivors to be more involved in as a community, as helping the next patient. You know, when I went through chemotherapy, I asked the doctor how sick I was going to be, and he said, moderate to severe. And I go, what does that mean? I have no idea.
What does it all mean?
It's just they have to tell you something. And
That's right.
They have never been there, done that, right? Yeah. And then you know, just surgical stuff and post-swelling and all those things. It'd be nice to know, but nobody really arms you with that, you know, and that's being armed. So we created a network called the Fourth Angel Mentoring Program. Uh-huh. And the Fourth Angel, basically the concept is the first angel is your oncologist. Mm-hmm. The second angel is your oncology nurse. The third angel is your friends and family. Mm-hmm. And there it is. Fourth angel is someone who's been there, done that. That can be the person that you call when you're really don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Your doctor can't give you that information because they've never been there. Yeah. They've never done that. But someone, a survivor, can talk to a patient in a way that no one else can.
Yes.
And really be a role model for them so that when they are at their, you know, their lowest, they can go and then that mentor can say, you know what, I've been right where you are. And it doesn't last that long.
They can be real. They can be real with what's happening with them.
You can't look at your mentor and say, you don't understand. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been exactly where you are. So Fourth Angel Mentoring Program is starting to it's exponentially just
that's beautiful.
Going like this because everybody that gets mentored sees the value in it.
Yeah.
And not everybody that survives cancer knows what they want to do with their survivorship.
That's right.
You can't, you know, all of a sudden be writing $100,000 checks to fund research. Yeah. You know, you can't be doing all, but you can be involved, you know, and a lot of people can walk, you know, on some of the walks. A lot of people, there's always something there for a survivor to do, but to have that personal one-on-one experience of knowing that within the cancer community, you just help somebody out.
And that's part of why we're doing this podcast show, is the women that we work with and present our support systems to via gifts from other people. Mm-hmm. You know, we sit and talk to them for a few hours sometimes, and when we leave, they say, I wish we could just hear your voice every day.
Yeah.
It's like,
I can do
this voice
now.
You want to hear every day.
I can
day.
Set you up with the Fourth Angel Mentoring staff, and they'll give you the training,
so we,
and they'll find you somewhere to help you. I can help you with that.
We can work together. I think we have some wonderful resources that we can work together to help.
And we're all in this together.
Massive number of people.
There's other mentoring programs out there, and, you know, it's not like we're having some sort of turf battle.
No.
It's like,
no,
fantastic.
Work together.
Now, here's what works for us. What works for you? And, you know, we can collaborate. I don't care if there's 50 Fourth Angel Mentoring programs out there, and they're all run by different people. I love it because
that's
something I didn't have that I really could have used.
You can only touch so many people, you know, and so it takes a large amount of people to touch the people that are affected by cancer today.
So in the S in our CARES, you know, for more information, people can go on scottcares.org, and they can go to chemocare.com. They can go to Fourth Angel Mentoring Program, and they can see, you know, more information about our fundraiser that we do every first Saturday in November. The way I see it, with what we've built so far, this can be a patient advocate entity in every cancer center in the country.
Yes.
And to be able to build a marketing plan together to create more more opportunities to fund research, because that's what I'm all about. I lost my mother to cancer, and I thought that it would be amazing as in my lifetime if I could find the cure for what she went through.
Yeah.
And honestly, her type of cancer, it's moved a couple ticks, but that was, you know, that was 77. So it hasn't gone as far as it could have, would have, should have.
We like to say we're supporting you while we wait for that cure. We want one day not to have a business and support systems, you know, for it to
be
done away with.
It's kind of fun that, you know, I work a lot with the Taussig Cancer Center at the Cleveland Clinic, and it's like, isn't it funny that you guys embrace me and all I want to do is put you out of business?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we just want to put ourselves out of business.
Yeah. I mean, everybody in the cancer world just doesn't want to be in that world.
That's
And so I do think that, you know, once they solve a few more things, especially with, genetic, you know, the research that's being done there, it was always in the past for research that the money would drive the science.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the genome, the science is way over there, and we got to find a way to bring the money up to the science.
That's right.
And so it's not going to be like we're trying to make things up as we go along. There's always going to be a young researcher out there, a young investigator that hasn't been funded, and they can't get their funding until they've been funded.
Right. I understand.
Only a government could think of something like that. I'm trying to be a gap filler. I'm trying to be, drive more of a human experience, get more information out there to people so they don't fear something.
Yeah.
They can just sort of, you know, again, look at it. We pulled the ugly, dirty mask off chemotherapy, as you're doing, and we can get to work.
That's right.
So my last question for you is really on a more one-on-one basis.
Mm-hmm.
We work with a lot of women. So say you're speaking to a man who's just been diagnosed. What is the most simple advice that you would give him as he walks into his cancer story?
It depends on how well I know them, but the first thing that comes to mind is this journey, every step of this journey is going to be exactly what you make it.
Mm.
And I think that speaks to all of us, because when I went through all, you know, my chemotherapy for 4 months and then I went into a big surgery, I didn't want anybody in my circle or in my room or in my company that was going to be a lower lip. I didn't want any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I only wanted teeth in my room.
understand.
So, you know, there's a part of that where I took control of the situation. The nurses, the oncology nurses, treated me like an 8-year-old. They decorated my chemo bags and gave me like SpongeBob and Scooby-Doo Band-Aids.
It's unbelievable.
They treated me like a child.
Yeah.
And every day they bring my chemo bag in on the roll. They go, hey, it's party time. And it was
You
great.
Want to take some of this?
No, it was
cocktail.
It was meant to be light, happy, sure. friendly, joyous at mm-hmm. times. It was never, and I made it that way. I created the environment where I wanted it to be a certain way. And I didn't want to be pitied. I didn't want anybody to be scared. I didn't want to have anybody in my circle or in my company or my room that was going to just feel bad. Mm-hmm. No. This is going to be
good.
This is going to be what I make it. Yeah. So I would tell somebody, I go, this is going to be what you make it.
That's good.
You
know, good
in so
advice.
Many ways.
And it's good very advice. Good advice. And we thank you so much for giving us your knowledge and the wisdom of your journey and your time.
And passion. Yeah. It's passion. There
well,
is
it like, is. You know,
there's a true passion to help other people there.
I've always, when I lost my mother, I hated cancer. And I've always wanted to participate somehow in the community. And then I became a survivor. And yeah. it was like, okay, now I got my street cred now.
Change you know? The picture.
Well, it didn't change my hate of cancer. It just changed the fact that now I'm in the community as a participant. Mm-hmm. And I can really roll up my sleeves to kind of rally the troops to,
right.
you know, to really be able to engage a community to drive,
That's right.
You know, everything we've got toward helping the next patient, getting out. That still early detection is the best cure mm-hmm. for cancer, and vigilance is really important. Women are much better than men at being vigilant with their physical health. Men, you know, they're bulletproof.
Yeah,
you know?
It'll be all right.
Yeah, but I haven't seen a doctor in 25 years.
That's
you
a courage.
Okay, yeah, really, yeah, you better go.
So, you know, all I can do now is just really try to bring great people
mm-hmm.
into my CARES organization and just grow it. Spread it out as much as I possibly can and just help everybody in the cancer community.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for being
you.
With us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
And we'll see you next time, guys. This is Lucy and Sharon, where we're not just surviving,
but thriving with you.
Bye.
Bye.